Hello, fellow fiends. Welcome to another episode of Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces. I am your creator and host, Cassiopeia. Don't forget, you can find me every Friday with new episodes of The Creepy and the Spooky. Also, if you subscribe to the Patreon or the Anchor pages, which you can do for as little as $5 a month, you get bonus episodes, a merchandise discount, thank you swag, and a mention in future episodes. If you'd like to support without subscribing, I have a Cash App and a Venmo. You can also follow on social media. You can like, share, comment, basically all the things you do on a daily basis that actually helps get the podcast seen and spread the word as well. Also, if you'd like to support without subscribing, you can buy merchandise in the Wiccan Fae shop at pizzaandpigtails.com, and you, the merchandise and the candles, both of those help. And if you are a small business or a big business, I don't discriminate, who is looking to get the word out on your creations, send me an email at creepycases.spookyspaces@gmail.com, and I can send you a list of all of the packages that I offer. And now that that's out of the way, let's get on to today's episode. So today's episode is actually one that made my blood absolutely boil. There's going to be a lot of emotion, a lot of different emotions with this episode today, as I'm also going to make the disclaimer that this week's creepy case is about the murder of a young man, and the details are a little gruesome, and there are some talks of racism, but obviously I don't condone racism. I'm just letting you know that it is related to this case. So if certain things you don't want to listen to or hear about, I do not recommend this episode. So let's dive in. So on October 9th, 1983, the body of a 23-year-old black man was found by squirrel hunters in the woods off of a power line encasement in Sunnyside, Georgia. Now, the details of his death are pretty brutal, and the newspaper described him as 5'7", with a light goatee and a tattoo on his left hand. Now, he had been stabbed dozens of times and had an X carved into his stomach, and the same thing was on his back. He had also been chained to the back of a truck and dragged through a field, being left to die under a massive oak tree known in the area as the Hanging Tree. Defensive wounds on his hands and arms indicated that he struggled with his killers before being left to die. Now, only after a few short months of police investigation, no arrests were made, the case was closed, and for 34 years, the case remained unsolved. Until 2016, after new evidence surfaced, and the case was reopened, and it actually led to the arrest of 5 people. Join me now as I tell you about the creepy case of Timothy Coggins. So Timothy Wayne Coggins was born on August 29th, 1960 in Griffin, Georgia, the 4th of 8 children who grew up in Spalding County, a rural farming county just 45 minutes outside of Atlanta. He was from a pretty large family in a divided area where white people stayed on one side of the tracks and the people of color stayed on the other. Now, Timothy's younger sister, Talisa, described him as young, exuberant, and he loved to dance. He was charismatic with a broad smile. Now, she actually did an interview with GQ, and she said that Timothy was the sibling that she was closest to. He taught her how to ride her bike, how to navigate around the town on her own, and when she had her first child, Timothy was the first to show up and congratulate her at the hospital. Now, she described him as funny and outgoing, he loved to stay out late and party with old friends and new, and that he actually never met a stranger. On October 7th, 1983, Talisa and Tim went to the People's Choice Club, a brick building painted black and tan with an inviting red sign tucked around the bend of a quiet road. Now, Tim actually knew the owner of this club, and he would do odds and ends jobs here just to make a little extra money. And being a Friday night with a fully stocked bar and hot barbecue for sale, it was the place to be. Now, Tim went directly to the dance floor while Talisa made her way to the restroom. And when she came out, she couldn't find Tim. Now, she started kind of asking around, like, you know, where'd he go? And people told her that he had left with some white men who had actually been asking for him, but nobody seemed to know who these men were. So she was also told that Tim had been dancing with a white woman, which was frowned upon in the area at this time. It's kind of weird when you think about it that this is the 1980s, and it's, I mean, of course, now with a lot of stuff going on in the world, it's not as crazy to think about, but you would think, just because I feel like the 1980s and 90s, people were a little more accepting and more, just a little bit more progressive thinking, and it's a little odd that this was still going on at that time. Now, Talisa returned home around 4 a.m. on October 8th. Tim had not shown up, which it was common for him to disappear for a few days at a time. He knew a lot of people around town, so the family assumed that he was staying at a friend's house. Plus, she was told by others that Tim knew the men that he left with, so the family wasn't really concerned. However, on October 9th, the body of Timothy Coggins was found in a field. He was only wearing a pair of pants and underwear, which had been pulled down right below his thighs. And he had almost 30 stab wounds to his chest and back, and a large X was carved in the style of the Confederate flag. Now, it was clear that he had been dragged as his face was severely disfigured to the point of almost not being able to even recognize who he was. Now, an autopsy showed that he was struck over the head and the backs of his knees were actually cut. So it seemed that whoever had attacked him made it to where he was unable to run. Now, I think the saddest part of this crime is that they didn't kill Timothy at that time. They actually left him in the field, alive, assaulted, badly injured, and he was bleeding out, and they basically left him to die. Now, police collected some items in the area that were thought to be connected to the murder, including a wooden table leg with black tape wrapped around it, a sweater, and an empty Jack Daniels bottle. Now, after a couple of days, people realized that the black community was not going to talk to them due to fear and lack of trust in the police. The sheriff actually ended up putting Oscar Jordan, a black police officer, in charge, and he combed the area looking for any witnesses or evidence, and he actually went around showing a photo of Timothy's body to see if anyone knew him. And he showed up at the Coggins family home, and it was there that he found out who this unidentified man was. Now, it would only be a few days that word was getting around that Sandra Bunn had been bragging and boasting about, and I quote, this N-word they had chained up behind a truck and dragged into a field, end quote. She's brought in to be questioned by the police, and she tells them that she saw her brother Frank Gebhardt, who's been charged with aggravated assault multiple times in the past and even spent time in the Georgia penitentiary, along with his girlfriend Ruth Mickey Guy and her brother-in-law Bill Moore, get into Moore's truck and leave, heading towards the hanging tree. Now, Frank and Bill were laborers at a pulp mill who held the reputations as tough guys with nasty, racist, and violent streaks. But lucky for them, they had friends in the department. Now, Frank actually dropped out of school in the sixth grade, and he was known to throw wild parties where he would drink and get violent, and him and Bill both had extensive records, and they even killed a cow on the kitchen floor of one of the trailers in the trailer park that they lived in, which, and like, apparently it was like people, I don't want to say worshipped, but they thought this was like an amazing thing. And I don't understand, because I find it to be quite just disgusting and ick. I don't even know what words to use. Now, after this news was reported, Oscar Jordan is suddenly pulled off the case and it's handed over to a white officer. On October 21st, Frank is questioned. He has an alibi. He was at his girlfriend Mickey's house all night, and she backs this up because, of course, right? Bill Moore isn't even questioned, which, A, you just, come on. Now, the story at the time was that Timothy was given $600 to buy marijuana for these men, but he and his friend Danny had run off with the money instead. Another story was that Timothy and Danny were selling drugs in the white part of the neighborhood, and it wasn't appreciated by the people that had gone after him. And it was said that Timothy was actually really, really paranoid because Danny had actually been murdered a few weeks before he was. Now, a little after this, the family started getting threats. A brick was thrown through their front window that read, "Hush, or you're next." A bloody t-shirt was left on the school bus that their stepfather drove in the mornings. And there was even a decapitated dog found in the hallway of their home. Now, I'm not sure if this was somebody had broken into their home and left the dog in the hallway, or if it was like actually like the entryway hallway. I couldn't really find that in my research, but that's just, it just makes you like shudder a little bit. Now, the family held a funeral for Timothy, forced to do a closed coffin. And they actually made the difficult decision to not add a headstone to his grave in fear that it would be vandalized, and they didn't want that to happen. So they didn't put a headstone there. In December of 1983, now despite the bragging and boasting, and Frank even made threats to his girlfriend, saying, if you keep on, you're going to wind up like that N-word in the ditch. But still, the case is closed. Now, Tim's brother, Ramon, said that it was devastating because we never knew what happened or how. It was a complete mystery. And it seems that the family would get no closure and Timothy would get no justice, as these threats created a sort of cone of silence and nobody was coming forward on either side. But let's take a moment and let's fast forward to December 2016 in Spalding, Georgia. Jared Coleman, a young investigator who's actually only in his second year at the GBI, or the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, and he's handed a few cold cases to take a look at to see if he can get anywhere with them. Now, he says that he was absolutely horrified by the details of Timothy's case, and it actually really, really kind of pulled him to dive into it. Now, he went back to question the witnesses who were questioned at the time of in 1983, and he actually went back and looked at like the list of people who weren't really looked into beyond their testimony, or people who just weren't even questioned at all. Now, unfortunately, by this time, Mickey Guy had passed away, so they weren't able to revisit her story, but she would have been a pretty big catalyst in this case because she's the woman, she was Frank's girlfriend, who it was said that Timothy was having an affair with. Now, in April of 2017, police talked to Frank Gebhardt. And at this time, he's in jail for sexual assault, and I'm sure there's no surprise there. But police actually get kind of suspicious of him, well, even more suspicious, we should say, because he claimed to know nothing at all about the murder of Timothy. And he claims that he had never heard of this this young man, and he had never heard of this case, he had never heard of this murder, he had no idea what they were talking about, which is highly unlikely, because even if you weren't involved in the case, if you didn't know any of these people living in that area, you would have at least heard about it, considering it was such a major, major story at the time. And during his interview, he just kept portraying behavior that just really, really kind of outed him. He kept getting angry, just more and more angry. He said he didn't care that the boy was killed, and he said that the boy should have minded his own business. What? And then when he was told that they had witnesses who would speak against him, he snapped back, "Give me the names of the witnesses. They won't testify." Now, like I said, that sounds quite telling to me. So Jared Coleman realized the more that he dug into this case, the deeper, the tampering with evidence, missing files, completely missing evidence, Timothy's pants, they just completely disappeared. And this flat out cover up is just blatant. Now, Sheriff Daryl Dix steps in at this point, and he's actually pretty eager to help build the trust back among the police and the Black community. And he actually assigns another officer to help Jared with the case, and they revisit the crime scene to try and get a scope of the play out of events. Now, he and prosecutor Marie Broder both told ABC News that it was harder than they thought to visit the area, and it just kind of still holds a very heavy feeling. And they say that Timothy was stabbed, and when he was dragged, he was actually dragged in like a square, and there was blood at each corner of the square, almost as if they dragged him, stopped. Dragged him, stopped. Dragged him, stopped. dragged him, stopped. And then there was another area where there was just a big pool of blood, where it was like a puddle of blood. But this wasn't where Timothy was left. He was actually found a little bit further away. Now, Sheriff Dix, while he was helping with the investigation, he actually finds a diary with journal entries from a Norman Klusky from the 1980s that actually held proof of rumored Klan members being in the police department and how he was actually approached and asked if he wanted to join. Now, they also found letters dated 2004 from a Chris Vaughn, who claimed that he had information and no one listened to him. It wouldn't be until 2007 when he was finally interviewed. Now, Chris Vaughn was actually 10 years old at the time of Timothy's murder, and he was actually one of those squirrel hunters who found Timothy's body on the morning of October 9th, 1983. And he had actually heard Frank Gebhardt say he murdered Tim, along with some other people. And it wasn't over money. It was over the affair that Tim was having with Frank's girlfriend, Mickey. Now, I know I've stated this a couple of times, but it's kind of one of those things where it's like when you keep hearing this story over and over and over, I get it. You're trying to cover up. You're trying to keep your friend who, you know, you're both in the KKK and, you know, you go and march in these parades together. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, come on, man, just do your job. But he tells that Frank and Bill lured Timothy to their place in Carrie's trailer park under the guise of a party. Now, we already know that Timothy loves to have a good time, and he was friends with a lot of people, even in the white side of the community, so he probably thought that there was nothing wrong. And Chris stated that he saw Tim and Frank arguing outside the trailer that night. Then they threw Timothy into the truck and headed off down Minter Road, the road that leads to the hanging tree. Investigators came up with the idea to have Chris Vaughn actually ask Frank about Timothy's murder. And they actually ended up wiring a jail cell. And so he gets a little bit out of Frank, but not really much. But when he asks him about the murder weapon, Frank actually kind of slips up and tells him that they'd never find it because he threw it in a well behind his house, along with some other trash and evidence. Now, of course, they immediately get to work on getting a search warrant, knowing that it would be pretty difficult to even get into this well after all this time. And the thing about the well is it was actually really close to the house, so they couldn't really, like, dig down into it. Later that month, they actually hired a hydrovac company to come in and clear the well. And hydrovac, this is where you take the water and you blast it in, and then you kind of, you blast the well full of water and you kind of vacuum out the items and everything that come up and out. Now, some things found were an Adidas shoe from the 1980s, exactly like the ones Timothy had been wearing, a man's shirt with stab marks that matched up to Timothy's wounds, and a knife handle that's blade had been broken off. I mean, I'm not saying this is our guy, but I'm kind of saying this is our guy. On October 13th, 2017, after months of putting together a case strong enough to go after them, Frank Gebhardt and Bill Moore, along with three others, were officially charged with murder. Now, a really cool fact is that Daryl Dix actually asked Oscar Jordan to come out of retirement so he could be the arresting officer. Now, in June 2018, their trial begins. endless details are told. 29 stab wounds, teeth knocked out, beaten, chained to a truck and dragged, and left to die. Now, as this was being told, Frank sat there with no emotion, and he actually was proud, claiming that he was just protecting the white race. From what? Like, honestly, I would love to know what you're protecting the white race from, because you are delusional if you think that this kid who's just having a good time, he was doing nothing wrong. Plus, your girlfriend was having an affair with them, so. Now, his trial lasted 9 days, and after 6 hours of deliberation, the jury came back with a guilty verdict. He was sentenced to life in prison plus 30 years. Now, Bill Moore took a plea deal bargain that brought his charge down to voluntary manslaughter, and he received 20 years in prison, but he died in 2021, only 3 years into his sentence. In 2017, Timothy's family finally put a headstone on his grave that reads, "Gone but not forgotten." Maria Broder told ABC News that, quote, "He befriended a lot of white people. He didn't really follow the societal norms of 1983. He was not following the rules of 1983, if you will. If you were a Klan member or a racist, any of those things would infuriate you and anger you to the point where Timothy Coggins became a target that needed to be eliminated and a message needed to be sent." Now, Talisa told how earlier that year, 2017, her mother, Viola, actually had a prediction that the police knew who killed Tim and that she wouldn't be around to see it, but that they would get justice. Now, Heather Coggins, Timothy's niece, stated, "We no longer have to tell the story about Timothy's murder going unsolved. We no longer have to tell people that no one cared about Timothy." Now, this, like I said, this case, oh, it made my blood boil. I watched a cold case file on this. It's called Love and Hate. If you want to check it out, I believe it's season 2, episode 2. And just reading the articles and just everything about it, let me tell you what, it made me mad, it made me angry, I cried a little bit, but it's just, how do you have such disregard for human life? Like, this kid was just having a good time, he was just living his life, he didn't think he was doing anything wrong, and I mean, he wasn't. I mean, sure, you probably shouldn't be having an affair with somebody, somebody else's girlfriend, but that's no reason to kill somebody either. Now, I will say that it's just crazy to me that so many people kept hush-hush and so many people were quiet and kept it to themselves for so long, even after Frank was arrested and put in prison. Like, it just, come on. But on that note, I will see you next crime. Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces with Cassiopeia is a Pizza and Pigtails production. All episodes are researched, written, and edited by yours truly. You can find new episodes every Friday, with bonus episodes coming out every other Tuesday. You can find the podcast on your favorite listening platform, or now you can find it on YouTube as well. Don't forget to follow along on social media, creepycases.spookyspaces, for all future news, updates, and maybe some content that you won't find on the podcast. Also, be sure to subscribe so you can get access to bonus content, early access to content, and a couple of little thank you swag. If you'd like to contact me about appearing on a future episode, maybe you would like to suggest your own creepy case or spooky space, or maybe you'd also like to reach out about ad space, you can reach me directly at creepycases.spookyspaces@gmail.com, or feel free to reach out through those social media platforms as well. And, as always, see you next crime.